Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations. Ante Up, it's your poker magazine.
From the Ante Up headquarters in Tampa Bay, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now, here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's August 28th, 2020. You're listening to the best poker podcast on the planet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
I don't even know where to begin today. I have grandchildren in the house. We're teaching. There's two hurricanes ripping through our area of the country. The weather is, heat index is like 120. Can't go outside and do anything because you're going to drop dead. Can't go somewhere else, you're going to drop dead. So, I don't know, Scott. How much longer can we do this show without just, you know, crying on air?
Well, I'll tell you, every week when I try to put together the show notes, I'm like, please be news. Please be news. Please be something for us to talk about. And so far, we've still been able to eke out stuff to talk about. So
yeah, we'll look up the definition of news later in Webster's Dictionary and run it against what you have here. But yeah,
I think there's some interesting stuff to talk about.
There is.
You go ahead and be Debbie Downer.
Just teasing. If I don't put up this, you know, negative facade, the show goes to crap. So I have to do it. All right, let's get going on
this. Oh, man. All right, so GG Poker, which is presently hosting World Series of Poker online events for players overseas, has stated that it will allow pro players that it has banned from its network to apply for reinstatement. In doing so, the site says it has an obligation to protect the poker ecosystem by not driving away recreational players, and it categorized pro players into three categories: good, regular, and bad. Categories didn't sit well with many pro players.
Yeah, you got to tell me what this means.
Okay, so there's a couple that actually there's a lot of things here I think are interesting. One, I haven't been following the GG Poker drama. Apparently, there's been drama all summer. Been off by radar, I guess. But apparently they've been booting people off. As a recreational player or a recreational, as pros call me, or rec, apparently. I do have a lot of respect for the fact that they come out and said, hey, there is a poker ecosystem that does need to be protected. If you if there are no recreational players willing to play anymore, guess what, folks? There are no games left for the pros to win. So,
right.
Now, that doesn't mean you tank. Doesn't mean you give money back or play soft. It just means you have to have a respect that we need to continue to bring people into the game. And keep them in the game, right?
Right.
So I like where they're going with that. So it is a little bit funny though that they felt the need to split pros into three categories: good, regular, and bad. And I didn't write down on the show notes exactly what they meant by those, but good are ones that give back to the community, you know, all that stuff that you normally think. Regular are the folks that just the pack their lunch pail and go to work every day and don't cause any trouble, right? Mm-hmm. And then bad are the ones that essentially take advantage, take every possible, let's put it that way, every possible advantage to secure a win at the table. There's a couple other things that I didn't put on the show notes, but it was learning all these terms I didn't know. Now I can't remember what it is now, but
I mean, look it up while you're talking.
Yeah, I'm trying, but now I'm at privacy policies and all this kind of. I agree. Let me get the anyhow. Generally the criticism, I think I don't really care so much about that because it's again it's pros whining. Here it is. Bum hunt. That's the word that I had now. So essentially, that's. Bum hunt, and I saw that in four articles this week. So, but apparently people know what it is because they even talk about it. Everybody knows what bum hunting has been, and that's a thing of poker. And I'm like, what? Huh? Anyhow, so apparently it's when you sit out in a game and you wait for soft players to come in, and then you sit in once the soft players are there. That's apparently called bum hunting.
Okay.
Didn't know that. So, yeah, that's where the pros get a little upset. They're like, yeah, okay, if you're using what it says here, real-time solvers, charts, data mine, bum hunt, collude, ghosts, and so on. It seems like everybody is in favor of all those things being bad except for bum hunting. They seem to think that's something that should be allowed. So,
the funny thing is that if you take the English interpretation of the word bum, it takes on a whole new meaning.
It does. Super work, folks.
One thing I want to ask about here is who's the one that's coming up with these categories? Like, do they sit around a boardroom and say, okay, this player, here are his stats, or here's her stats, or, yeah, I mean, yeah. Right? Yeah. And then also, it's kind of like ripe for some seriously unethical things going on. Like, you could say, I don't like this guy, I want to have him deemed as a, you know, or somebody who actually got deemed something, they could, like, try to bribe somebody to change them to a, you know, a particular term or category or whatever, so that they'll succeed better at the table. You know what I mean? There's just all this crap that could happen just from this kind of thing going on. It's like almost profiling, you know, racial profiling, but this is like player profiling. It's just, it's kind of weird that they're offering this up. They should stay out of it.
Well, I mean, we'll see what happens. I don't think you get like a top fan badge on Facebook right. on this with, labeled as one of these pros. I think it was more just trying to explain what they're trying to get at and trying to encourage users on the site to be a what they consider a good pro, because that helps the ecosystem, which helps not only GG Poker, of course, survive, but other folks and other companies survive as well, too. So I don't think they're painting it like that. It did sound like that they will, we are going to identify you as a professional player or used, you reinstated, you had to use your real name. You couldn't use a off right. deadline.
Or, yeah, Will. Yeah, yeah. Will
right. Hop. So, yeah. So people know who you are. So, so I don't know. We'll see what happens. But I do appreciate the trying to protect the wrecks out there, because they really are the ones that generate the money. It is a trickle up society in poker, you know, we saw that when online got shut down Black Friday, right? So you took away all the people that are coming into the game that know what they're doing. That money goes to somebody who does know what they're doing, and then that money goes up to the pros who really know what they're doing, right? So,
yeah.
I think it would be better for pros to take a step back and go, hey, all right, I get what they're trying to do here, rather than complain about
it. Who would ever want to be labeled a bad pro? You know, and well, then I'm an angle shooter.
Like, hey, these are things that we don't think are good for the poker ecosystem, and if you're doing any of them, then you are destroying the poker ecosystem.
Wow. So making you change your ways.
A little kind of shaming, but it's not shaming as much as just, you know, I think kind of reminding. It also says, you know, bully and harass opponents and eventually drive away honest opponents. And then it says, see the games dry up. That's what you don't want, right?
So, yeah. Hey, you brought up an interesting point about, we were talking earlier and you were saying how, you know, you don't dump chips to the player to keep him in the game and all that stuff. But what do you think about that as a technique for like a home game where you have a player who loves to play, but if he loses all the time, you know, he's not going to come back and he's like the economy for the home game or whatever. So would you do that? Would you consider like giving up a pot to him or just showing down a crappy hand when you know you could probably bluff him off his hand? Or are you in favor of something like that? Because I remember reading pretty much every book from the 70s and 80s would tell you to do that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, and that's the interesting thing about poker, right? It's supposed to be a dog-eat-dog world, right? When you're at the table, you play your best game, and if you can't afford to lose, then don't put your money on the table, right? So, there is that other metagame, and we're going to talk about this a little later with AI. Later on in the show, but of you know, making sure that that game continues. So yeah, I'm not going to say what I would do necessarily, purposely dumping doesn't seem like something that is cool, but yeah, I'm going to make that person feel as comfortable as I think I can make them feel to keep them in the game. I think that's a long, I hate to say con, but that's what it would be, right? That's a long con, right? You want to keep them in the game so you can get more out of them. So if you have to take a couple steps back to maintain that longevity, then that's probably worth it. It's probably more profitable for you in the long run, right?
Yeah, but I guess my question then would be, at what point are you straddling the ethical? You know what I mean? Like, if it's one thing to say don't tap on the aquarium, they'll call somebody an idiot because they've sucked out on you on the river, because you tap it on the aquarium, you're going to disturb him and he's going to not want to come back to play because you're insulting him in front of everyone. But it's another thing to intentionally lose when the object of the game is to try to win and the best hand wins and all that. You know, and I just wonder, at what point do we drift off into the unethical because you're not winning you can win? Yeah.
I think there are lots of ways to keep a player in a game, and not all of them come close to ethics, right? So I think that's I guess that's what I would say to that, is I would start with the ones that don't cross any ethical lines, you know, being nice to the guy, you know, maybe buying him a strategy book, I don't know, things like that, right? And then, you know, there is a line at some point where it's like, okay, all the other stuff isn't working. This guy's losing and he's not going to come back, and then you might have to think about something else. So I don't know. I've never had to get to that point, I don't think. So I don't really have a good answer for you. I don't think I'd be comfortable with that. I would be more comfortable in trying other ways to keep players.
Yeah, like I would. We had somebody in our game who didn't like stud and stud eight, and so I would walk by his desk and give him tips every once in a while on how to play the game so that he would not, you know, be ticked off when it got called, because I always called stud eight when we played. And so,
yeah, well, I mean, so that's a good example. So in that scenario, I mean, what you did is fine, but another way around it is not to call stud eight, right?
Yeah, no, I know, but then I'm not enjoying myself
you,
either.
But you know, right? But it keeps the guy in the game. So now you got to decide what's the better outcome, right? So,
yeah, I would ask him sometimes while we were playing, hey, it's my turn to call, but whatever you want to call, go ahead. And then let him pull his game or sometimes. But, you know, I try to make them think that they know more than they do about how to play the game, so that they wouldn't mind it being called. And then I can call the game that I'm good at, you know, or for the other people at the game. Because it's like one thing, if you cater to that one person, that's fine. But if I'm calling games that benefit Scott Long because he's a limit player and I'm a stud or no limit player, then it's like, now I'm hurting myself to keep this guy in the game. Instead, I'd rather get him better or encouraged to play, rather than just putting myself at a disadvantage with the other eight players in the game. That was why I did it. But
yeah,
okay.
I mean, ultimately the goal is to keep the game there, right? So yeah. I mean, it's the golden goose thing, right? So you can let that goose keep laying golden eggs all day long, or you could cut it open and
and eat its meat.
Get the gold out of it and be done with it, right? So, but you know, I think poker has that way of, once you get into it, you can get in kind of deep, and then you start, you know, you start playing hard. That's what it is, right? So you try to look for every possible edge, and then eventually, I mean, that does well for you, but then you drive people away, and then you don't have any game to play. So
yeah, true.
It's tough. It's, you know,
balancing.
You would think, I can imagine a lot of people saying, hey, I am supposed to be pushing every edge, and why shouldn't everybody else be pushing every edge, and then we wouldn't have to worry about this, right?
Yeah.
But the reality is, there's some people that are just on there to have fun. They don't want trackers or spreadsheets or all this other stuff. They just want to play stud eight, right?
Yeah.
So,
all right. I don't know. Cool.
We'll see what happens, bud.
Yeah.
All right, German pro Stefan Sontheimer, who is sixth in all-time money earned in his country, has become the latest poker player to have his business bank account shut down because of poker. Online poker is illegal in Germany, and apparently Commerce Bank. I don't know why he didn't go to Deutsche Bank. I mean, pretty good to our players. Anyway.
That's right.
Commerce Bank didn't want to take any chances on running afoul of voting laws. Last month, Dan Negreanu reported the Bank of America shut down his business account with no explanation, and previously Doug Polk said a large amount of his money was frozen by his bank with no explanation.
You know, you'd think they'd have bigger problems in the world right now. I don't know what they could be, but apparently poker player money off of online is the biggest issue they have here.
Yeah, again, as usual, I can see this from both sides. So, I mean, obviously from the poker side, it's, you know, these are business accounts. These aren't personal accounts, right?
Yeah.
And as Sontimer said, hey, I'm paying taxes on my winnings. So, you know, I have to have a business account. I need my money. You know, if I don't have a place to put it, then and you don't have a way of tracking it, right?
Right.
So, and on the other side, though, you know, it is one of these things that it's it was interesting. I don't know if I ever said this on the show, but when we changed the company name from Andy Up Publishing to Andy Up Poker Media, right?
Right.
Our bank actually at that point started asking us what we do, because when it's publishing, they didn't even know what Anti meant or Anti Up, right?
Right.
But as soon as we put that word poker in it, they're like, oh, wait a minute, are you involved in gambling?
Jeez.
And so I had explained what it was, and he's like, okay, well, we're just a very conservative bank, so, you know, we would not want to go down that road if you're doing stuff that we don't want. And I'm like, that was the wake-up call to me. I'm like, wow, I didn't think about that. But I get it, you know. They don't want to run afoul, as I put in here, run afoul of any laws. So if you don't want to take the time to actually research and figure it out, it's easier just to show you the door and not take your business, right? So definitely can see it from both sides. So
it's funny because they, you know, they see a term and they light up. But it's like, if we were going to do something that was illegal, we wouldn't put a questionable term in the title of our company. It's like, hey, smokingcrack.com LLC. You know, I mean, we're not. I mean, seriously, what? It's hilarious that they would.
Yeah, Bum Hunt. I mean, come on.
Bumhunt.com. Oh man.
No, I know what you're saying. I get it. But again, like I said, I can see it from both sides. So, I mean, it needs to be a conversation. And I think that's what Negreanu said. It was like they didn't give him a chance to even explain what that money was or where it came from. And, you know, if you explain it and then they decide, well, hey, we're still not comfortable, then okay. You know, I mean, it's their company, right?
So yeah, they have a right to do it. But just
interesting. You got to go to another bank. Yeah. It's also probably an opportunity for a bank out there to say, the bank that actually took the time to understand what's going on here, to say, hey, you're welcome here, folks.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Worked out that way as well, too.
Yeah.
So. Okay, so, hold on. Your big face is in the way of my little scroll bar. So I can scroll down to the next item.
I do have a big face, don't I?
It's a yellow polo. Do you still have that polo?
I do not. That,
yeah,
that shirt.
I don't have any anymore. So, yeah,
I know. I should change that picture.
All right. Maria Konnikova, the author who went from newbie to poker champ in 1 year, has written a lengthy article about artificial intelligence and poker on the website udark.org. In it, she interviews some of the people responsible for programming the computers who have been successful in beating professional players heads up. They say while AI improves rapidly, it will be difficult for it to conquer the most difficult aspect of poker, human emotion. And to that end, I want to ask you, do we even want it to?
Well, first, I think we need Maria Konnikova to, like, send us some sort of residual check of something. I mean, we have her on the show, like, every other week now, it seems.
What's funny about this is I read the entire article. It was fascinating. I didn't see who wrote it. And it was republished on a different website. And it said the original one is on Udark. So I'm like, okay, well, if I'm going to give credit to the website, I'm going to give credit to the original one, right?
Right.
Rather than the one reading it on. So I go there. And then, you know, I always like to mention the actual author's name to give them credit as well, too. And I'm like, oh, you got to be kidding me. She is everywhere now. So.
Maybe she wants to buy a magazine. I always thought this from day one, that, yes, AI would probably mathematically learn how to beat us. But I think it would never be able to account for emotions, ever. I don't think it ever could, because it can't read your mind. So, I mean, there may be a time where there was a Big Bang episode years ago where I think the guys at MIT had invented this machine that could read your emotions and how you were thinking and what you were feeling, so that Sheldon could learn, because he had no idea. That was just one of the things he failed at in life. And so, while I don't know if that was just made up for Hollywood or if they're actually working on something like that, yeah, that might, if you can sit there and put that computer in front of somebody and then have them read emotions, then, you know, maybe someday that might come into effect. But I've never really thought that AI would ever do that. And then you're asking, do we want it to? I mean, I don't ever want AI to do anything. So I don't know if I want it to know what I'm thinking either.
question was, what is enjoyable about poker? Obviously, winning money is enjoyable, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's more the playing of the game and trying to outmatch your opponents, right? And part of that is emotion. So you're not making the optimal decisions all the time because you're a human being. And so I think to some degree that when you make a bad play and it works out, that's you get a high from that, right?
Yeah.
Like, hey, I just got away with something. And if you make a bad play and it goes horribly, then you also have an emotion. You don't feel great about it, obviously, but you have an emotion over it. And that's why we play, you know, rather than, you know, we talked about computers with like backgammon being a solid game. So eventually when you get to the point where a computer can make the proper decision 100% of the time, where's the fun at that point?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. But I mean, we're not
there is that if you can get somebody to play against you that doesn't do that, and then you just, you know, you're gonna win. You're guaranteed to win, right? So but that's not poker, that's not backgammon, that's not the game anymore, right? The game's gone. The game is trying to do your very best every time you sit down, knowing that you are a flawed human like everybody else. So
But you're asking it from, it's weird because it seems like you're asking the question from our point of view, but I'm thinking that it's written from the AI point of view, right? So that's, if the AI can conquer what we're thinking, then it's always going to beat us. And that's, I don't want to always lose, so I wouldn't play the AI. I would still play humans. But
yeah, I guess let's take it the other way. I guess I'm talking about right now in this particular example, we're talking about AI playing against humans, right?
Yeah.
I guess what I'm assuming is part of the education of the AI is the application of it could be make you a better poker player. We haven't got to that point yet because right now it's not really designed to help you play poker better. It's designed just to see how good they can make AI and with imperfect information, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But eventually, I mean, think about like let's go back to that first item that we mentioned, these tracking software, the HUDs, all that kind of stuff. You know, I've never used any of that because it's not, it takes the fun out of it, I think, to have somebody tell me what to do. I mean, literally, I mean, let's just say Daniel Grano is at my house and he's behind me and he tells me what to do every single time. How fun, that's not fun anymore, right?
Yeah, yeah, no. Right, absolutely.
It's not fun.
Right.
So I guess that's where I'm getting at with that is if, you know, eventually this, and they talked about, you know, how far AI has come in such a rapid time, and you know, there's five different programs going on at the same time, and they're really doing their best to try to mimic emotions and unforeseen things and teach a computer compassion, right, which it doesn't have.
Right.
So, I mean, they're going to get there at some point, I guess, but you know, at what point then, I mean, do we not play then? It's like you turn your computer on in the middle of the morning and you go about your day and come back and find out how much money you won.
Yeah, I mean, they still have that now with bots. It's just that they're not,
yeah,
it's not human emotion. But, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess, yeah, then you would move on to something else, I think. I think you would, if you wanted to make money at it, you know, you would just let it make money for you and then you move on. But I, you know, that would...
But, yeah, so, but what do you move on to? This is the other interesting thing this morning. You know, because I was writing about this, so Google knows everything that I'm trying to think of, right? So my news feed this morning was an AI article. It's always scary how that happens, right?
Yeah.
There's an AI article about they programmed a computer to dogfight in fighter jets.
Oh, wow.
And they had it face off against a Top Gun instructor. And it wasn't Maverick, sadly. But and they killed the top, the computer killed the Top Gun instructor in five straight dogfights.
Wow.
So with the Top Gun instructor, obviously a very proud man, right? So a little sour grapes there. But I think what he said is like, he's like, hey, if that happened in the real world, that plane that the AI was driving would have crashed and burnt. It would not have been able to survive the decisions that you had to make up there that you can't anticipate. So whoever programmed the computer did a very good job of telling it how to win that particular dogfight, But if, you know, something else, another MIG shows up, or it starts to rain, or, I don't know, all that kind of stuff, right?
Or if we hit the brakes and they fly right by. Right.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. Powerful move, yeah. then that's when you need a human to be able to make those adjustments, even though a human would be flawed in the mechanics of everything else, right? Which the computer is never going to make a mistake in. So,
I
don't know. I thought that was kind of interesting. I mean, so they're attacking AI in lots of different ways. And I even remember, like, one of the first times we talked about these poker computers, they mentioned that was one of the applications they were looking for military uses for, right?
Yeah.
And in fact, this Top Gun article, they mentioned that this, you know, they want to get to the point where there are no pilots flying these attack planes.
Yeah, yeah. Essentially drones, but bigger planes with bigger weapons. Yeah,
yeah. Now you're not risking any human life, right? Yeah. So as somebody outside that bubble, not in the military, I'm like, hey, that sounds great. We can do something where no one dies. But I can see it on the inside of the bubble, like, you know, hey, yeah, you could teach your little computer game to do all you want, but you can't teach it to be a human.
Right.
It's like so with the poker as well, too. So.
Man, we're getting deep on the show again. This is great. It's like 2 weeks in a row, I think.
Anyhow, I would strongly encourage everybody to go to that udark.org, and it's the letter U, dark.org, and look for that article. Right. It's very lengthy and very interesting. They take you into, like, the whole... where the computers are housed and stuff, and they talk about the calculations that they... I nerded out over it. So if you want to nerd out over something, it's a good thing to read.
It always comes back to Big Bang Theory, apparently. I don't know how that happens.
Oh, man. All right, here's this week's update on casinos and poker room reopenings and reclosings. In California, Morongo Casino Resort Spa has reopened its poker room. Stone's Gambling Hall has opened an outdoor facility with poker, and Ocean's 11 will open an outdoor facility with poker on Friday. AntiUpMagazine.com/reopen list verified details on casino and poker room reopenings and reclosings. If you have updates, email us at editor@AntiUpMagazine.com, and we are also emailing a weekly e-blast with updates that you can subscribe to on the homepage at AntiUpMagazine.com.
So these California openings, some of them are trying to skirt some things, or are they...
Well, I don't know if it's skirting is the right word. They are not allowed to open an indoor casino, so they've gotten creative and said, hey, there's no prohibition on outdoor casinos. So they've built these tents in their parking lot with surveillance cameras, and the Stones one looks fantastic. They posted a bunch of pictures of it already on their Facebook page. I don't think I've seen anything from Ocean's 11 yet, but... And even Stones even opened restaurants out there. It's almost like food trucks. So again, the idea is if you're outside, then there's no prohibition on it. Now we'll see whether the state has the same impression of that once they open.
Yeah.
It could be a short-lived reopening. But the amount of money that Stones alone put into it, I would hard pressed to think that they did it without having some conversations, right?
So, right. I mean, they get their, you know, their lawyers involved probably to figure it out. So how about Morongo? Is that because it's...
That's a tribal casino.
It's tribal, so, right. Okay, so, okay.
Yeah. So,
all right.
So here was the funny thing. I was talking to my my wife about this, and I'm like, just how hard this whole world is now. So they opened, and then they were shut down again. And then they came up with a way of doing it outdoors, so it's supposedly legal, right? But then Stones wasn't able to open right away because the air quality from the wildfires was too bad.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you just can't win, right?
You just can't win. I know. 2020, damn it.
So, you know, I see. We have a couple Antioch fans who have been keeping me up to date on the Stones thing, so I'll be looking forward to some reports from you folks if you go out and play. And Golden West in Bakersfield also did I think it might have been the first one to do the outdoor casino a couple weeks ago, but they at least when I last checked they were not doing Hold'em yet. They were doing just the California games. So but anyhow, so
we'll stay on top of it though.
Yeah. Let me know how much fun it is to play poker at a plexiglass table outside in California during a wildfire. So
okay, any updates? I'm gonna read them in reverse this week, see what happens.
Yeah,
If you have a hand of the week, listener spotlight, or call the floor submission, email us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com or post in the Antiup fans group on Facebook. If you want to join that group, all you have to do is search for Antiup fans on Facebook, and you can get feedback on hands or ask call the floor questions or just discuss anything poker. Check out our 11 vintage Antiup logo designs on merchandise at antiupmagazine.com/shop. You can buy t-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, phone and laptop cases, coffee and drink mugs, and much more with your choice of Antiup Magazine, Antiup PokerCast, or Antiup Poker Tour logos. And Papes, the Antiup Fans free online tournament series on PokerStars Play Money site, is available everywhere. Details on how you can join can be found at bit.ly/PAIPS. Games are on the 6th, 16th, and 26th of every month and rotate disciplines with a main tournament followed by a second chance event. PokerStars lets you claim 15,000 free chips every 4 hours. We get to complete O'Malley's move today, which is always exciting. This is going to be part one, and then we'll see you on the other side.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week we are playing $2, $5 No Limit Hold'em at our regular casino. We bought in for $500 and currently sit with around $700. The game has a few more wrecks than usual, but they are all pretty timid and don't often step out of line. However, they do like to semi-bluff on occasion. The blinds post, there's an under-the-gun straddle to $10. We get one caller in an MP, and it's to us in the cutoff with the King of Hearts, King of Clubs. This is a great hand to pick up in late position in a straddled pot. I'd like to get heads up here, and hopefully the straddler is in the mood to step out of line. We make it $75 to go, accounting for the limper and straddler plus a little extra. The small blind calls, which is rather surprising. He bought in for $500 and doubled up within the first 10 minutes of play. He's a rec player, and since doubling up has hovered consistently between $1,000 and $1,200. He currently has $1,100. Everybody else folds, and with around 170 in the pot, the flop is the Queen of Clubs, 8 of Diamonds, Deuce of Spades. This is a decent flop for our hand, and we are planning to either bet or raise no matter what our opponent does. Our opponent checks, and we make it $80 to go. I thought about betting between 100 and 150, but I'd like to get a lesser hand to call, perhaps something like Queen 10, Queen Jack, or an 8. Our opponent does not disappoint and makes the call. There's roughly 330 in the pot, and the turn is the Ace of Diamonds. Okay, not a great card. And what makes it even less great is our opponent leads into us for 225. So, we've got hit with an overcard to our pocket pair. If we're wrong here, we've blown our profits, and we might have to call a bet on the river, most likely a shove. What's the move?
Okay, the table has been described as full of timid recreational players. Our lone opponent in this hand calls a raise to $75 in a straddled pot from the small blind. He check calls a seemingly safe flop and then leads into us when an ace falls on the turn. If we raise or call, it's almost assuredly getting all in. See anything to like here? I don't. So, pretty easy fold for me.
Yeah, this is a tough one for me. I was thinking, why bet if you have an ace? We have shown an interest in betting, and we certainly could have an ace ourselves. I just don't know why someone holding a better hand than us would bet out now. I think we're ahead unless he has us crushed. Unless he has us crushed, he won't bet the river. So if we had called. So I'm going to call. I'm going to do something different than you, so see how that goes. Here comes part two.
Hello again. We called. I don't know how else to describe how I came to this decision other than I looked at the guy and just really didn't believe him. I know I said we'd probably have to face a shove on the river, but being across from him, I really didn't think he'd bet again. Plus, I'm happy getting two streets of value out of this hand. The river ended up being the seven of clubs, our opponent checked, and we instantly checked behind. Our opponent tabled the King of Diamonds, Queen of Diamonds. He flopped top pair, turned the nut flush draw, and almost succeeded turning his hand into a bluff on the river. I'm not sure what I would have done had he shoved. I can't help but wonder if we lost value by not shoving the turn. Was our call the right move? Could we have gotten some value out of this player on the end? Until next time, I'm Malcolm O'Malley saying sometimes you've just got to size your opponent up. I hope to see you on the felt.
Well, certainly happy for our friend O'Malley here, but no way I'm shoving that turn. Now that we know his card, yes, we can be results-oriented and know why he woke up on the turn and that he almost assuredly would have called if we had shoved that turn. But with the information we had at the time, I think a shove would have been unwise, even reckless, I would say, probably.
Yeah, I agree. I'm definitely happy with the result and the way it was played. I'm glad we just didn't do that. The story made sense, but since it's a game of incomplete information, I'm satisfied with the check around.
This is Daniel Negreanu of FullContactPoker.com. You're listening to Ante Up.
It's time for the AdvancedPokerTrading.com Hand of the Week. Send your hands or situations to podcast at AnteUpMagazine.com. If you haven't won something from us in the past year, you'll get a free membership to Advanced Poker Training, the world's number one poker training site. Our good friend Matt Hayward's back with another PLO hand, Chris.
Yes.
And it is just PLO, so no eights. So.
Okay.
All right. It's four-handed, it's online, 2 cent, 5 cent PLO. Let's see. It's a four-handed game. I think I said that right. So no small blind. The under the gun limps, and we are next with the nine of spades, nine of diamonds, seven of diamonds, seven of clubs.
It's an interesting situation you're in because you're four-handed, and there's only a minimal amount. There's 10 cents in this pot probably, right? Because there's no small blind. So, I mean, I could just as well fold and go get a drink, or I could limp. I don't see myself raising and getting out of hand here. These Omaha hands can be pretty brutal when you try to get out of line with crap. So, we have basically no nut hands that we're hoping to hit other than quads. If you flop a set, generally you're not going to have the top set. You know, you got to have a really good flop for it to be top set. And if you do have the top set, generally that means that there's a straight out there with these little cards. So I don't like playing this hand at all. It's only a nickel. So, I mean, I guess I would probably call and just hope for an awesome flop. But generally, if I'm playing this full ring game, it's in the muck fast. So as soon as I see the first nine, I'm almost mucking it. So, but in this case, yeah, I may just call, but I'm not doing anything stupid with this hand, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, so, one, not that it matters right now, but it might matter on. I didn't tell you that we have $4.59 in our stack, so
okay.
Keep that in.
Okay.
Here's the struggle I have with this. This is not a great hand. But it's a hand that has some possibilities, and we're four-handed. So when we're four-handed, you know, you can't wait for those good hands because you're going to get beat up by the blinds. So you're going to have to get out of line at some point and just be smart about it when you do it. So double-paired hand, and do you have diamonds there? So four-handed, you know, again, it's less important to have the nuts. As it would be in a full ring game, right? So,
right. So
sometimes these sets will be more powerful in a four-handed game. These middling flushes, these middling straights, will actually be more powerful. So, you know, I think this is the hand I definitely would take a flyer on. But yeah, I'm right. I'm with you. Certainly not going to raise at this point, unless that's been, you know, unless we're playing the players. If we played this four-handed for a while and we have an idea of what people are going to do. But generally, I would think four-handed, when you raise, people aren't going to respect the raise much, right?
Because right.
They figure you're trying to pick up the blinds, so now you're just building a pot that's going to make it more difficult for you when you hit this middling hand. So I'm going to limp along. We'll see what happens.
Okay.
All right, that's exactly what our hero does. He says it's not strong enough to want to raise, but it's too nitty to fold. I agree. The button, who has $7.16, raises to 20 cents, and both of the other players call, and it's back on us.
Now you got to call. I mean, I'm not going to fold now. I mean, yeah, it's 15 more cents, but everyone's in the pot, and there's enough money out there to justify calling to hit a set, and then, or even flop a straight, you know, or something. So I'll call.
And we close out the betting, too. That's also important as well.
Yeah,
too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm calling as well, too. Our hero says, we call, nothing has changed. And he says the button has been way too aggressive pre-flop. So, okay,
that's, all right, so that's good.
Important information. 80 cents in the pot, and the flop is the jack of spades, nine of clubs, ace of clubs, and it checks to us.
Well, again, we've hit a set, but it's bottom set. I would see a lot of players raise with jack-jack in their hand, with ace-ace in their hand. So I'm not exactly ecstatic. It's also a pretty wet board. You know, we've got clubs, we've got Broadway, we've got other straights. So I'm not going to be ecstatic over this flop. I'm still going to be pretty cautious. I may bet here just to see if everyone was just fooling around. Try to thin the field a little to someone who might be drawing and then put the hammer down on the turn. I don't know. But even then, somebody has like a set of jacks, they might just call our bet and, you know, we don't know. So, again, this is why this game is so difficult and you're always trying to make nut hands, not, you know, bottom set hands. So, if I do bet, it's going to be, I don't know, maybe two-thirds of the pot. I just feel like this is precarious because it's not really a great hand. And the other thing, too, is you got nut clubs out there now. Someone can make the nut flush with the king of clubs in their hand, which is the type of hand that people speculate with when they're in this type of game. Somebody could easily have limped along with jack-jack, and now we're crushed. So if I do bet, it's going to be two-thirds of the pot. Maybe I do bet because it's only four-handed, and we could still have this hand won. It's just a precarious situation.
Well, lots of things I don't like about this. One, you mentioned the wetness of the board. So any club comes now, flush gets there. We don't have clubs. We have a single club. Our flush possibility are diamonds. There's no diamonds on the board, so we don't have a chance at that. So those things are concerning to me, as are the possibility of pocket jacks and aces, as you mentioned. The other big thing, though, is the button is the one who raised preflop, and he still is yet to act. So if we bet now and he raises, what do we feel like doing with that, right?
Yeah, that's a good point, too.
He's probably going to bet, I assume. So I would actually really, really, really like to see what the other two opponents in this hand are going to do when that happens. If they both get out of the way, then I'll feel a bit more confident about my hand, right? But right. if he makes a bet and a substantial bet and they both call, now I'm really worried, right? So I don't want to be I don't want to orphan that money that I'm putting in that he's probably going to raise and then they call. So if I check here, we'll have a better sense of who's really interested in this pot. And if it ends up just being us and the button, then I'll feel a lot better. And yeah, if it's not just us and the button, then I'm going to feel like I need to quad up, really, probably. Right?
Yeah. And of course, we don't want to tell Matt what to do because that would be boring, right? Because if he's always told how to play poker, then what's the point of it? He just let us play his hands for him and then he can go off and make a sandwich. So.
Oh, man. All right. Here it says the flop is too wet and we have bottom set. We check. All right. Good. See, we're all on the same page so far.
Okay.
Well, that's interesting. I guess the... He doesn't see what the button did, so I guess he moves right on the turn.
So everyone checked?
Well, he said it checks around to us, but we weren't on the button either. So, all right, I don't know. I'm guessing the button checked then, which is all kinds of interesting to me if that's the case. But, all right, we'll see what happens. Turn is the ace of hearts. So our board now is jack of spades, nine of clubs, ace of hearts. And once again, it checks to us.
It's funny because... I would say that almost nothing has changed because you're still afraid of the jack-jack, right?
Yep.
Now, I know you have nines full, but you're still afraid of the jack-jack, and then you're also afraid of the random ace-jack that may not have raised pre-flop. Doesn't mean that they... You know, it's because you have ace-jack in your hand in Parliament Omaha. It doesn't mean you're raising. I mean, yeah. So, you know, you're still fearful here. I mean, I guess at this point, you got to think about putting some money in to see if anybody's going to come back at you. I mean... I'd hate to just be put on the spot on the end when some guy bluffs at it. Now I gotta, you know what I mean? If I put some money out now and I take it down, hey, I won 80 cents or whatever it is. But if I just sit there and keep checking, you know, 10-10 might beat me now because a 10 might come on the river or something, you know? So I feel like we got to put something out there just to see what the heck is going on.
Yeah, I think you made a really good point that, and this happens often in Omaha, where your hand improves but actually doesn't improve.
Yeah.
It gets worse, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I mean, like when you have the nut straight and then the next card turns it into a baby flush, you know, what would you rather have, right? Obviously, the flush is higher than the straight, but your nut straight is can't lose, but your baby flush is extremely vulnerable, right? So, same thing here. So, yeah, so we have a boat now, which is fantastic, but it doesn't change. It's still the worst possible boat out there. And all those other hands we worried about, as you mentioned, still have his beat. So here's what's interesting to me is generally when I'm in Omaha and I flop up not the top set, and certainly the bottom set, my goal is just to get to the river as cheaply as possible and hope that it holds up.
Yeah.
So I think I might still think that. But you're right. If it checks again, if the button checks again and then we get to the river and I gave somebody, like you mentioned, with pocket tens a chance to beat me, I'm going to feel bad about it. So probably... I could defend either way. Probably the better thing is to put some sort of bet in here. But if you want to be a little bit more cautious, I think there's nothing wrong with that either. So,
yeah, I mean, it could be some people who don't believe you have a full house and they're still drawn to the clubs. So you might get somebody to just call your half pot bet or something. They might think you're stealing it and they have a random ace in their hand that's not a full house yet. So, you know, I mean, I think you got to get some value out of your hand too. You can't always assume that you're going to lose just because it's hand of the week on our show. Right. So.
Yeah,
let's get some money in there. I don't know how much, though. A third, half pot, whatever.
All right, our hero checks. He says it's still too wet with bottom full house. The button bets 48 cents into the 80-cent pot. The big blind calls, but the other player folds, and it's back to us.
It's tough to imagine that we're ahead when two people think that their hand is good enough. You know, I can't imagine somebody drawing right now.
Yeah, you can't think that your club draw is going to be good now, right?
Or so, definitely not the straight. So,
yeah.
Somebody has a random ace and somebody has jack-jack. That's what I'm thinking. So,
seems like a pretty good analysis of what's going on here. Yeah. So,
I'm thinking I can lay this down. I mean, I'm not going to hold out bet what I have, like $4 in my hand. So, I'm not going to bet that kind of a percentage, which is basically 10% of what I have, on a one-outer. So I think we're behind. I think we're losing, and I could probably lay this down. I know it's four-handed, but I probably still could do it because what could those two players possibly have if one was bluffing and the other one isn't? And if the other one isn't, he's got to have us beat, I would think, unless it's just a random ace. I don't know if I can call 48 cents here.
Yeah, I think you make a good point. So, I mean, trying to figure out what both of these opponents have that would make... I mean, obviously the button was described as being too aggressive pre-flop. No one showed any interest on the flop, so, you know, his bet could be just trying to see if no one has anything, right?
Right, right.
But the big blind calls. So what are you calling, again, unless you're really bad at this game, you're not calling with that straight or flush draws. So you have to have something here, and anything that you have here is better than what we have, right?
Yeah, other than the random ace. I there are people out there who have, like, ace, two, three, four in their hand right now with, like, a suited ace, and now they've hit a third ace because we let them do it for free.
Yeah.
Now they're thinking any two, any three, any four, any ace gives them a boat, and it's top boat. Well, not top boat, but it's a boat. So, I mean, I think that they could be hanging around with a random ace. So one guy could be stealing... The other guy could just have a random ace that's hoping to boat up still. And so if that's the case, yeah, you could probably justify a call because you're obviously ahead. But that's a pretty narrow window.
Really, the only way that you can make that call is if that's the exact scenario that you just laid out.
Yeah, that's a narrow window.
And that's really, really tough. So I don't know. I mean, I'm not a big fan of shorthanded games to begin with because you have to make these really difficult decisions often. But... So maybe I'm not the best person to give advice here, but it just seems like this is a danger Will Robinson moment.
Yeah, I agree.
So. All right. Here it says we have 479. The pot is $1.76. We bet $1.68, which is three-fourths of the pot, and only the big blind calls. All right, so here's our worry, right? So
yeah.
We figured out that the button really was just trying to see if anybody was interested. He didn't have a hand. But the big blind who we knew had a hand is the one that calls now. So,
yeah, this person could easily have the case nine with an ace, could have ace jack, could have jack jack. One of those hands are very likely to someone who didn't go crazy preflop, you know, because he wasn't the person who raised. He's a big blind. So, I mean, I would think that, you know, you could have jack jack very easily and not raise, whether it's four-handed or not. You could have ace nine or ace jack and not raise. And there's no reason to have gone crazy with it after the flop either, because if you had something like jack-jack, you still didn't have top set. Now, you could say to yourself, hey, why wouldn't ace-ace have raised pre-flop? But people get tricky, you know, and just because you raised with ace-ace pre-flop, in Omaha, it means almost nothing. So, I don't know. I still think that this guy's got to be, not just because it's hand of the week, I think that this guy, he's a little cautious, but he can't be drawing. He can't still be calling all these bets and be losing to us, I don't think, unless he's got that random ace. And how confident can you be when the river drops? Because no matter what that card is now, unless it's your fourth nine, you know, this guy could have boated up on you a different way if he had a random ace. So, I don't know. I don't like it.
And you're scared of any other card that comes.
Yeah, I don't like that pot bet, that three-quarters pot bet at all.
All right, our hero says, I felt that neither player was truly strong. My thoughts are only an ace-jack hand here has me done. Someone who has ace of spades or jack of spades should have bet out earlier, gotten more in before my decision to raise. And that's too specific with the flush draw on the board, hence it is a good chance to value bet.
I don't think I agree with that.
We've expressed our differences. Yeah. So. The river is the four of hearts, so final board is jack of spades, nine of clubs, ace of hearts, four of hearts, and our opponent checks to us.
Ah, interesting. I mean, now the check tells us that he doesn't have the nuts, but we're willing to put money in, so he's being cautious with his hand. I gotta say, this guy has jack-jack in his hand.
Really does seem like jack-jack, doesn't it?
Yeah. Because if he had ace-4, ace-9, or ace-jack, he'd be bet out here. He might not bet out with ace-4, but I think he would. Because why was he calling all the way with just a random ace, and then he finally boats up and then checks to us? So I feel like we're... I mean, it could be that he has a random ace and didn't boat up, and that's why he checked. But I'm going to be happy to check behind.
Yeah, it just seemed like too much danger there. I mean, the way that our hero played it, he got his value bet in on the turn that normally we would probably have to make here on the river. So I feel like we've gotten the money in that we should at this point. So I'll check behind and hope I don't see jacks.
Yeah, I mean, we have, what, the fourth best hand, right? Jack-jack beats us. Ace-ace beats us. Ace-jack beats us. Ace-nine beats us. So that's only the fifth best hand.
Yeah.
So, I mean... There's no way.
An ace-4, did you
mention? Ace-4, yeah, an ace-4. So we have, like, the seventh best hand. So, I mean, I'm happy to check behind.
Yeah. All right. Our hero says there's 5-12 in the pot. We have 286. And he says, I jam. Well, and truly pot committed, what could a guy have to play it this way? A hand with aces should have re-raised pre-flop to protect. Ace-jack, maybe, but he has shown no aggressive behavior. Big blind takes their time before calling, and they show the four of spades, jack of diamonds, jack of clubs, jack of hearts.
Ooh.
For pre-flop trip jacks and a better boat.
Wow.
Was I too aggressive bottom set? Is this just a crap call pre-flop by the jacks? Well, we called it, right?
Yeah. Wow. Well, here's the thing about the jacks. And by the way, could this guy crush this board anymore? I mean, every card he has is on there. but when you think about it pre-flop, everyone limped. Well, they limped it to the button, and the button raised, and now the big blind is looking at, you know, 15 cents, but he's got these other guys calling. Yeah, it's a horrible, you just get out of the way with that hand. But that doesn't matter. What mattered is that he easily could have had jack-jack in his hand just by itself. Didn't need that third jack for it to be a horrible play. I mean, the jack-jack alone still beats you. That's still a hand that's possible. So you can get mad at him for all you want for playing jack-jack 4-jack. But at the same time, if he had jack-jack 7-4, you know, you wouldn't fault him because he had jacks. And you say, oh, well, the reason why is because he can flop a set more likely with two jacks out there. But the possibility that jack-jack is still out there is the reason why I don't shove on the end there. I mean, and clearly it was out there. The guy had it. And if he has jack-jack 4-5, He's not raising it alone. He's not showing any aggression, because why would he? He doesn't have top set on that flop. Then he boats up on the turn, and you're betting. So he's going to let you bet. And on the river, he still isn't positive that you don't have, like, ace four or ace nine. So he's got a check, and then he lets you bet, and you jam, and then he thinks about it. And he's like, wait a minute, if you had all those hands, why wouldn't you have, you know, or whatever. So I just agree that, you know, I mean, I think it's a bad play pre-flop. But just because he had three jacks in his hand doesn't mean you should have negated the two jacks in his hand. You know what I mean? Right. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah, okay. Yeah, absolutely. Okay, yeah, to summarize, it's a horrible hand that he shouldn't have played. But once he's in the hands, you got to consider what he could have in his hand, not whether he should have been in with it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
And all along, jacks just seem pretty possible there. And and if you look at it again, I mean, the big lesson here is unless you have top set, you need to be very, very cautious, right? So he was doing that. He didn't have top set. He had a better set than we did, but he's in the same spot we are, right? Yeah. Other than actually a little bit obviously better, because we have to worry about the jacks as well too. But all of us have to be cautious about the aces being out there. So he was trying to get to showdown as cheaply as possible, which is what I always said. And
the thing is, in hold'em, if you have the seventh or eighth best hand, you might consider a value bet, or you might consider getting somebody to fold a better hand, because you know there's so many hands out there. But in this case, it's Omaha, so it's exponentially likely that this person has you beat if you don't have the nuts. And so a check behind here, I think, would just made your life a lot easier. You'd been a lot happier. You'd still have 286. In the 2-5
think game. About this too. Think about how tough that last call was for our opponents. So yeah. I guess in one sense, you know, we probably made the right play there, because be able to win was to get him to lay his jacks down, right?
Yeah.
So I'm not going to fault that jam necessarily on that, because he was probably sweating bullets too, and then was happy when he saw that you had nines instead of aces, right?
So yeah, he added it up.
Yeah.
Well, sorry, Matt, but thanks for the hand. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Locke.
We'll see you at the tables.
Ante Up is a production of AnteUpMagazine.com. Contact the show at podcast@AnteUpMagazine.com. If you'd like to advertise, send an email to advertising@AnteUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.
It's August 28th, 2020. You're listening to the still surviving podcast of Chris Cosenza, Scott Long. We can't say that. Oh, man, there's an outtake. All right, here we go.
I mean, you can say it.
We haven't had a lot of outtakes lately, so I'm going to put that at the end of the show for the truly dedicated fan. All right, here we go.